Podcast number 3. This is being recorded on Thursday, July 21st, and it's the third chapter of Epiphany, a novel in progress by B.D. Harrell. The process in this novel is very much like the process when I wrote the Magnolia Chronicles. I'm actually jumping around in the story, writing stray chapters here and there, then fitting them into a larger whole. This past week, I wrote a chapter and part of another where Emily Stevens and Lizzie Elston go to a cabin in Adams County, owned by Lizzie and used by her for her rendezvousing with her secret lover. Not sure if rendezvousing is a proper word. Let's try with for her rendezvous, plural, with her secret lover. That affair was touched on when we did the Chronicles. This week we touch on an important apply for Lizzie as well as an encounter with one of my favorite characters, freelance writer Tricia Michaels. You met her in Saving Magnolia at first. Let's head on over to Zeke's Cafe for Chapter 3 of Epiphany. Robert Clark, he's the other one. 2 days later, Dan was in Zeke's Cafe talking with Harold Richmond when the subject of the missing plaques came up. Bob was Lizzie's beau after a fashion, Harold continued. He served in the later 50s in Germany. When he came back, he got a job at the bank and started seeing Lizzie. Her parents never approved of the relationship. She was too high up in the social ladder to see someone who handled money for a living. As far as they were concerned, Bob Clark was dirt. They actually forbade her from seeing him. I suppose they saw each other anyway, Dan pointed out. She said something about going to see Tommy Frost with someone. I assume that she went with the other person whose plaque was missing. Well, they had a clandestine relationship while her parents were still living, Harold revealed. After they both died, Bob and Lizzie still kept things under wraps for a couple of reasons. She was afraid of her older brother, Emmett, for finding out for one, and for another, the superintendent of the school district at the time wouldn't stand for it. Any idea why? Dan asked. No one knows for sure, but it might have had to do with Dr. Wells' service during the Second World War. Harold drew Dan closer so as not to be overheard. The word is that Dr. Wells served in Europe. He claimed to have been part of the invasion on D-Day. He considered Bob Clark's service in Germany 10 years after the war was not enough to merit his inclusion on the wall. He would have had Lizzie fired on her way back up the aisle if she ever got married to him. I take it that feud went on for a while, Dan said. Oh, yeah, Harold confirmed. Lizzie held on to Clark's plaque until after Dr. Wells retired and moved to Florida back in 2010. So Lizzie and Robert Clark saw each other anyway. Sure did. They had a place between Peebles and Hillsborough, close to the resort. Are you talking about the naturist retreat? Harold nodded his head. They had their place since about 71 or so. Now, I've heard tell that both of them are members in good standing at the retreat, too. You're kidding, right? Dan chuckled. Who else around here would know what they were up to? Well, it's pretty much an open secret to most of us. Hell, even Reverend Kello knew. Dan chuckled. I would have never guessed it from her. Nobody did, Harold said. At least nobody who didn't need to know did. Everyone has a secret. At least everyone thinks that they do. Almost always someone else is in on it. Well, if someone else is in on something, then it really isn't a secret, isn't it? Dan pointed out. Well, yes and no, Harold replied. What do you know about the people who attended your church? You keep certain details in confidence as part of your job, now don't you? Well played, Dan smiled. There are open secrets and there are secret secrets, the policeman continued. Like when you were a kid tearing up the roadways here in Fuller County being chased by a certain highway patrolman. You thought you were hot stuff and that the patrol had no idea who you were. Well, let me tell you something. I could have busted your tail 100 times back over in the day. I knew who you were. I knew where you lived and I knew where you hid. And so did every other lawman in the county, he concluded after a dramatic pause. Harold let what he said soak in while the server came over to warm their coffee. "The only reason you never got busted was because you weren't doing no one any harm. If you were ever in danger to anyone, we'd have had you in juvie faster than you could say Jack Daniels." Dan and Harold enjoyed a hearty laugh. In one sense, Dan was relieved that he had someone other than Emily to talk with without being judged. Part of the problem he'd been having recently was due to some of his flocks judging him behind his back. He had no idea what was being said, but he knew that there was something because of the way certain people treated him. Vera Mace, for example. She'd show up at the community church once in a blue moon to stir up trouble. Normally, she was Wynn Richards' problem. She would make her semi-annual appearances dressed exactly like she would have 60 years earlier, usually sporting some hideous hat. After sitting through services quiet and unassuming, she would make a point to spread her particular brand of venom directed toward Dan. "He sympathizes with those homosexuals," she'd sneer. "His wife breastfeeds her child out in the open. It's not natural," she exclaimed not long after Hope was born. "That man's preaching is way too liberal for me," she huffed once. "He's been ruined by that uppity wife of his," Vera complained. "Those children of his are nothing but a bunch of little heathens." At that last complaint, Dan pulled Vera Mace aside and politely told her that if she couldn't say anything nice, she should say nothing at all. That last complaint took 8 weeks before the fire. And while Dan Stevens watched his friend Harold Richmond leave Zeke's cafe after discussing Lizzie Elston's secret lover, he groaned to see Vera Mace coming his way, staring him down. "Well," she demanded, "it looks like you finally got what the good Lord had coming to you. Now maybe the decent people in this town will finally have a church and a pastor without an agenda for a change." "And it's good to see you too, Miss Mace." Dan was not about to let that woman ruin his day. "What broom did you fly in on?" he thought. Providence held his tongue. "Don't you good morning me," she declared loudly enough to be heard in every corner of the room. "There are those of us who's had enough of you, your family, and your liberal agenda. The sooner you're gone, the sooner this town can get back to normal again." She harrumped one more time before turning around and marching right back out the front door. Out of the corner of his eye, he spied the reason Vera turned and fled so quickly. Glenn told her a couple of months ago she was no longer welcome here, Tricia Michaels told the pastor, her hand on his shoulder. "Thanks, Tricia," Dan said, scooting over so she could sit with him. "No problem, Dan," she responded. "You have enough on your plate without Miss Contrary raining on your parade." "You don't know the half of it," he said. "Yes, I do. Emily and I have been talking. She's worried about you, you know." "I thought that was our little secret," Dan said. "Sometimes you have to let someone else talk to maintain your sanity. You have Harold, Emily has me." "She chose wisely," he smiled. "There is no doubt," Tricia agreed. "After all, she chose you." Dan enjoyed the company of the freelance writer. She was everything Emily was, smart, witty, and insightful. Like Emily, Tricia Michaels was almost universally liked in Magnolia, or for that matter, most of Fuller County. "Emmy tells me that you've been down lately," Tricia continued. "Even before the fire, you seemed distracted." The only other person aside from him to refer to his wife as Emmy was his father-in-law. Evidently, the two women were connected at a more personal level. "We came to the conclusion that maybe you needed some time off." "I can't," Dan told her. "I have too many responsibilities to take time off." "And if you don't, you're going to burn out. At the rate you're going, it's going to be sooner rather than later. I wasn't supposed to tell you, but Emmy and I have been making arrangements for you to get away for a week alone. You need that time for her sake as well as yours." "What right do you have to interfere?" Dan asked. Dan paused to gather his thoughts. He felt anger welled up within him. At the same time, something told him that Tricia Michaels was right. He needed time. Time to figure out his next step in life. "Sorry," she resumed with a sigh. You say that you and Emily have been planning this? Yes. Okay, then, he agreed. If Emily says so, it's okay with me. I'll let her know, Tricia told him when he was getting up from the table. We still have a few details to hammer out, but we'll let you know about some of those details in a couple of days. Tricia got up from the table and returned to her regular booth. Dan looked around to see if anyone had overheard their conversation. Probably not, he thought. But then again, it's hard to keep a secret in a small town like this. Next week, Dan finds out that he'd been sort of set up and he gets a send-off. This author hopes that you all are enjoying my little pageant. Now, if this is your first ride on this merry-go-round, you are more than welcome to go back to collect chapters 1 and 2, available on this website. Pay no attention to the lack of quality on some of these recordings. This is just a small contribution that I'm making here and there. This is being done in my home in real time. Yeah, I'm going to stumble now and then. Understandable when you consider that I'm a sight-reading work I've done weeks or even months ago. Enough excuses. Look for my other books, Saving Magnolia and The Magnolia Chronicles, in Amazon.com or on CreateSpace. Write to me and I might even send you an autographed copy by genuine U.S. mail, with proper payment, of course. During the meanwhile, you have a veritable ball. Don't take any nickels, and be seeing you.